And we're live. All right, everyone. Thank you for your patience. A few technical issues like they always happen. And appreciate you guys standing by for our conversation with Bob Berg on Getting to Hell Yes. So one of the special moments for me in this conversation is I came across the book, The Go-Giver, probably about, at a point in my career, I was going through transition. And I'm sure many people are feeling this right now. I had started a company, sold a company, and was working for a larger organization and kind of lost. And lost without what I could do, what value I could add, and like felt like coming from a position of being like in full power of everything to be completely depowered. So totally lost, unable to activate, unable to figure out what I was doing, had a major effect on my presence. In retrospect, probably not my best dad at the time, probably not my best husband, probably not my best friend. Because I was just caught in this, stuck in this world of not knowing what to do, where to go. Found this book and learned about the 5 stratospheric laws of success. And those laws of success, I started to internalize into someone who's a firstborn, who's, an outgoing person. I found this laws of success to be very compelling from a mind shift, especially from being in a corporate environment that was, had its own issues. And so I went and proceeded to do what seemed natural in the book and give probably 15 to 20 copies of this book out to everybody else that I met that was going through issues.
Wow.
And so, because I was so compelled by the message that The Go-Giver had to give. And I've got to share with you, everybody, I am just like, this is one of the whole reason why this show started was because I was seeking to find to solve a problem for ultimately our company and ourselves. And I went back to the basics in terms of what is my unique ability? What is my unique skill? How can I activate that and start creating momentum around the change that we create for our customers, our prospects, and the market? So today, I am so thrilled to have Bob Berg with us today, the author of The Go-Giver, inventor of this mindset of serving for on your way to success on the Go to Hell, on the Get to Hell Yes podcast. Bob, thank you for joining us today. I appreciate you listening through my long intro. Thrilled to have you here today and talking about sales.
Well,
as we always start off, we kick it off with Bob, a little bit about your background. We can get into the Hell Yes part of it afterwards. And then ultimately the problem that you solve and we'll touch on the five laws of stratospheric success, which has ultimately driven a lot of my mindset in the last, 8 years. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. That was a wonderful introduction. Just made me feel like $1 million. Thank you.
Wonderful. I'm glad. It's what I hope I can do. So a little about yourself. How did the idea come about? Where were you at?
Yeah, I had been in sales for a while. I started out as a broadcaster and graduated into sales and knew nothing about sales when I first began. So I floundered for the first few months. And then I was in a bookstore one day looking for some help. And this is 40 years ago or so. And back then, you didn't know about these kinds of books and materials unless you knew. You just didn't know, right? And they weren't prevalent like they are today. And so I was just looking for something and I saw that there was a whole shelf on sales, on selling. I didn't know there was actually a how-to. And I saw a couple of books. One was by, Zig Ziglar. One was by Tom Hopkins, two of the legends in the sales space.
Yeah.
And I got those books. And I like to say I never read them. I devoured them. And I would just study them night after night until the wee hours of the morning and just practice and drill and underline and rehearse and dog ear and make check my, I just totally immersed myself in it. And interestingly enough, within about 3 weeks, my sales began to go through the roof. Now, there was certainly nothing any different about me at that point. 3 weeks, from 3 weeks earlier, other than I now had a methodology that I could
share,
but really a system. And I personally define a system as the process of predictably achieving a goal.
Repeatable.
Based on a logical and specific set of how-to principles, right? The key is predictability. If it's been proven that by doing A, you'll attain the desired results of B, then you know all you need to do is A and continue to do A and continue to do A, you'll get the desired results of B. So, so that was what I needed to hear. That gave me the confidence. And so I just began to make a study of sales. I'd get all the books. I'd get the, back then it was cassette tapes. Yep. And I'd go to, you know, to seminars. And, but what I came to realize too, is each of these books that I was reading were recommending all sorts of personal development books and tapes as well. So, and so, you know, now I'm starting to build a library, right? You know, how to win friends and influence people, the magic of thinking big, think and grow rich, the richest man in Babylon, Psycho-Cybernetic, you know, all these classics. And I'm realizing that success is really an inside job. I mean, it manifests itself outwardly, but it begins in here with what you put into your head and what makes it down to your heart, and then what you begin to apply and make part of your life. Mm-hmm. And so, so I became a, you know, a junkie of personal development, and but of course also the application of such. Again, it's not enough just to read it. And so, you know, eventually I worked my way up to becoming sales manager of another company several years later, and started to teach people what was working for me, and was asked to speak at different and blah, blah, blah. I made a career, began to make a career out of it. So the idea for The Go-Giver really, in a sense, started with my first book, Endless Referrals, which came out in the 90s. And it was really, it was a how-to manual for entrepreneurs and salespeople who they knew they had a great product or service. They knew it brought lots of value to their customers and clients, but they didn't necessarily feel comfortable or confident in going into their local communities and building the kinds of relationships that would cause people to want to do business with them directly and or refer them to others. So that was the system I was giving them. But I'd always thought, wouldn't it be great to, you know, be able to take the basic premise, which is that all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust, and turn that into a parable, you know, parable, short story, someone could read in a single sitting or two. And really, but I'm not a parable writer. I'm not a fiction writer, which basically is what a parable is. Fortunately, I met a brilliant guy by the name of John David Mann in the early 2000s. He was the editor-in-chief of a magazine I was writing for. And even back then, he had a great reputation as a magnificent writer. And I got to know him, like him, trust him. And he was the only one I wanted to do this with. And I asked him if he would be the lead writer, storyteller for this. And fortunately, he said yes. And, you know, we put the book together. But, you know, really, the impetus is just it's a way of doing business that works and is congruent with the values that I think most entrepreneurs and salespeople have, which is one of service, wanting to make other people's lives better and being rewarded handsomely for it.
Do you find so? And then just for context, I'm going to try and I want to architect this conversation around the five laws. So law of value, law of compensation, law of influence, authenticity, and receptivity.
Receptivity.
Mm-hmm. And they're really well laid out in the book. And as a person, like, we're not taught these things, but they're common sense, human nature, golden rule. They feel that way. When you present them in the book as an architecture, I found it really, really wildly aware of my behavior and that. And it could, and again, it might have been circumstantial, it might have been the situation, but I felt overwhelmingly though that I was talking and not listening. And so when I was going through Go-Giver, the part that I found the hardest, right? So law of value. So, you know, the more people you serve, the more money you make. Compensation, the more the better. Compensation, you know, influence. But I found the parts that were really difficult to really angle in on at first as starting point was the law of authenticity. Mm-hmm. Dan Stolzen calls it your unique power. And I think I'm still seeking it right now. And I'm an adult with grown kids, growing kids. And like, I thought when you talk about the system in here, the every law seems pretty straightforward to kind of like compute. Now my gap was always a law of authenticity. When you're talking, am I unique in that situation, or is it that it's very difficult for us to understand who we really are. Or is it one of the other laws that becomes complicated?
No, well, I mean, I think you make great points, and it always begins with definitions and really understanding what is even meant by the term. Now, in the story, the law of authenticity, law number 4, says the most valuable gift you have to offer is yourself. And in the story, the mentor in that part, Deborah Davenport, she shares that, you know, all the skills in the world, the sales skills, technical skills, people skills, as important as they are, and they are indeed all very, very important, they're also all for naught if you don't come at it from your true authentic core. But when you do, right, when you show up as yourself day after day, week after week, month after month, people not only feel good about you, they feel comfortable with you, and they feel safe with you. And why wouldn't they? They know who they're getting, right? And a big part of trust is consistency. People, as part of human nature, is we desire to understand our world in a world that's often very difficult to understand. We demand consistency in a world that's often very inconsistent, and people are often very inconsistent. So that person who is authentic is very consistent. Now, the challenge is, there's a couple things here.
Because they're being authentic. It's easy to be consistent if you're being authentic.
Exactly. So what is authentic and what isn't? What isn't it? Because I believe that, and I've noticed this since the advent of social media, that authenticity, the term, which it, while it's often used and often in an admirable way, I think it has been hijacked. Authenticity has come to mean no boundaries. Just say or do whatever you want, whatever you think. It doesn't matter who you offend, because, well, at least the person's authentic, and that overrides everything. And sure. I disagree with that, actually. You know, this would be like the person who says, well, I have anger issues and I yell at people a lot, and if I were to act any differently, that wouldn't be authentic of me. And I think that's a lot of malarkey, actually. It simply means this person has an authentic problem that they need to authentically work on in order to become a better, higher, more effective, authentic version of themselves. So we never want people to see authenticity, as use it as an excuse for not growing, but instead use it as impetus to step into that highest self. I would define authenticity, and then I want to talk about one of the problems with why some people seem not to have it.
Yeah.
I define authenticity as simply acting congruently with your values.
Okay.
So if you're doing that, you're being authentic. Now, why do people have a challenge with it? Because, like, well, if authenticity is so good for business, which it is, why do some people come across not as authentic, but often as Latin term would be phonus balonus, right? You know, not authentic at all, right?
Yeah.
And we might think, well, it's because they're, you know, dishonest, or they're trying to pull one over, or they're a con artist. No, it's a big world. There's people like that, but that's not usually the case. Typically, if someone does not show up authentically, it's because they just don't have the self-confidence to do so, right? They don't fit. And let's face it, it's hard to show up authentically when you don't feel you have anything worthy of showing up authentically with. Why is that so difficult to really understand? Well, I believe we all have two types of value. We have intrinsic value, and that is simply by just being here, by being a human being, but we have value. We have great value. But we also have what I call market value.
Sure. And
I define market value as that combination of strengths, traits, talents, and characteristics that allow you to add value to the marketplace in such a way that you'll be financially rewarded for it. Now, the good news is we all have this. We all have these aspects of, or assets, as my friend Mike Littman used to call it, assets of value. Mm-hmm. However, because we're so emotionally close to ourselves, sometimes we're the last person to recognize it.
And
what we might be good at, whether it's natural or something we've worked hard at, or a combination of both, which it usually is, once we really have a thing and once it really becomes part of it, we actually devalue it because we just figure, well, that's just how it is. If I can do this, everybody can do this. And that's not necessarily what it is.
It prompts the second question. This is off script, but like, are we in an authenticity crisis right now?
I don't know. Probably some are. Some aren't. You know.
Yeah.
I think it just depends on who the person is.
When you talk about like authenticity, and then you've got kind of like, what's your brand, right? Like a brand is like, just in this context here, thinking in terms of brand is like a manufactured version, a polished version of your authenticity, so that you can continue plowing ahead with that kind of like brand. But then like authenticity really is what's easy to do. It's the least amount of effort because it's who you are.
I think depending on situations we could take, you know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with crafting a brand that is going to communicate value to that audience who's most likely to be interested and want to buy from you. When it comes right down to it, though, a brand is always defined by the marketplace. You know, the brand is what other people think of you. Now,
you
can't control that, but you can influence it.
Influence it, which gives us number four.
Right, exactly. And so I think one of the big things is in terms of recognizing our market value is being able to step away from that emotion in a sense. And this is why someone like yourself, a coach, a person who can help someone see what they've really got, right? And whether it's a mentor, a professional coach, whether it's something it's being able to have someone who can see your highlights, right? Who can see your strong points, those strengths, mm-hmm. traits, talents, characteristics that you might not be able to really recognize. And they can do this because they're not so emotionally close to you,
right,
that they can be somewhat, you know, dispassionate about it. So, you know, they need to care, but they need to be able to be far enough away that they can actually see it. But when we don't, and this is dangerous, when we don't understand our market value, this is when we lower our prices, right? Yeah. Because we don't feel that we have the value to charge what we should be charging, right? Mm-hmm. Lower our prices. We tend to give too much of ourselves away inappropriately. It's just not a positive. So we want to be able to really understand what that market value we hold is. And it's, again, it's gotta be authentic. It's not something you can manufacture. It's something that is there. Mm-hmm. You can keep improving on it, but we've got to be able to know, and that's what helps us to be authentic, because we genuinely have confidence in those strengths that we have.
And I think that, you know, the one thing that I kind of landed on myself or my own journey is that, you know, discovering my authenticity, and I still, like you said, I'm still trying to discover it. It's a journey of like finding, you know, it, with respect to value, like it's finding the market that values your that part of your authenticity, right? Versus trying to just push it out to the world. And so like in terms of a market, like being an authentic, whatever, 1, 2, 3, doesn't mean anything to the ABCs. So you got to find the other 1, 2, 3s that are willing to pay for that problem or for that authenticity, right? Like I found it interesting in kind of looking back on my life, like especially getting into moving into the law of
receptivity. It's a tough
receptivity,
one.
Right. Receptivity is that it's difficult to, well, at least in my journey, it was difficult to initially seek feedback for fear of hearing what you're going to hear, right? Oh. Or hearing the truth, right? And so like, I always found that there's two things that I've really enjoyed, especially recently, is that by having an offer to present, there's been a lot more that's come back. Like my return on investment has been overwhelmingly 100x with respect to even these conversations and doing what I find to be what I enjoy to do. But it's also being receptive to introductions, to offers, to, you know, many different playbacks in terms of what we're doing, mm-hmm. that otherwise was unavailable to me if I didn't get into that motion of seeking and asking.
Oh yeah.
And even the ask of feedback makes you receptive to it, right? And it's often funny, because in my life, that people will often decline gifts that are offered to them. And then those gifts never, it's like being invited, great example, being invited to a party, right? If you don't, you know, not that you should go to every party, but people that host parties are hosting it to have people there because to enjoy and to give. Well, if you constantly decline invitations to parties, you find yourself not invited to parties anymore.
That would make sense.
Right. And so by being receptive to those invitations, you can now be part of that joy that that person is getting by hosting that party. And the same is true in so many different other things where we're able to manufacture situations where you can create an opportunity to receive feedback even when you're not looking for it.
Sure. Well, you know, you said something a few minutes ago that was profound, and that is, you know, having it difficult to desire feedback because of, you know, the truths you might hear, or, you know, that it's not. And, you know, one thing I have noticed from the time I began studying success, and fortunately I've seen it a lot more brought up a lot more lately, is that successful people tend to really seek out and embrace reality. That's so important. And part of reality is, or part of the, of effectiveness is dealing effectively with that reality. Mm-hmm. Ray Dalio talks about that, talked about it a lot in his book, Principles. Mm-hmm. And the type of feedback, respectful feedback, but feedback that he was able to engender throughout his company, because people were, and it didn't matter what level of the company they were at, they were expected to provide feedback, honest feedback, you know, to be able to call people out, again, respectfully, but to mm-hmm. call people out. It didn't matter even if it was Ray Dalio himself. And for this to happen, there has to be a culture where not only is that encouraged, but that people have to be willing to deal with that reality, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so it's so very important. Michael Singer, in his, you know, great book, Living Untethered, talks about that. You know, so much of personal happiness is that you're in tune with reality.
Right.
In a great book by Byron Katie, called Loving What Is. Her defining premise of the book, which she said in one of the earlier chapters, was, when I argue with reality, I lose, but only 100% of the time.
Yeah, I like how you open the book, Law of Persuasion, or the your persuasion book.
Oh, The Art of Persuasion.
Art of Persuasion. In your first chapter, you talk about the realities that we can, or the nature are not true. Yeah, we convince ourselves the truth that are not, just plain not true.
Right.
When we take a look at, now, you know, the first two, which are kind of the ones that are like, they seem to be the most obvious because it's kind of like price times quantity, the law of value, law of compensation. Those two, you know, the one thing that I've always struggled with, the five laws, and this is kind of in our email exchange prior, mm-hmm. is the time component. Like, I love it in terms of it gives you a channel to activate, you know, and to go, but how would you coach people? I mean, sales were driven by a quarter and a number, et cetera. How do you coach a quarter, a number, a quota, et cetera? How do you coach people on applying the Go-Giver framework, the five laws, with the time element that relates to sales?
Okay. So that's a great question. And I love it and love that we get a chance to discuss that. First, and I think this is so important. Again, this is dealing with reality. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I used to say this when I spoke at sales conferences all over, and it used to get a lot of laughs. And that is, I'd start by saying, nobody's going to buy from you because you have a quota to meet, right? They're not going to buy from you because you need the sale and you need it now. They're not going to buy from you because you want to reach a goal. And they're not even going to buy from you just because you're a nice human being. They're going to buy from you because they believe that they will be better off by doing so than by not doing so.
Correct.
And when you think about it, it's the only reason anyone should buy from you or from me or from anyone else. So, right. You know, and everybody laughed because, of course, we all know that intuitively. Yet how often do we really approach our sales as though, you know, I need this sale to happen. So it's going to, well, you know, you can need it to happen as much as you want, but it's only going to be to the degree that you have helped this person see where it's in their best interest. that they're gonna buy. So, you know, people have asked me through these. So are you saying shouldn't have quotas, shouldn't have goals, shouldn't have, I'm not saying you shouldn't have any of that. I'm just saying that's not why someone's gonna buy from you. So, that's what we need to know. So let's say you're talking about a certain, first of all, most types of businesses, a product or service, whatever it is, there are cycles that are pretty natural in terms of mm-hmm. how long it's going to take. Not for all businesses, but for some. So you can kind of judge, you know, what the time frame is going to be as far as how it should be if you have done a good job of creating a relationship, having this person as a good, solid, qualified prospect, the follow-up, the follow-through, the sales conversation, the mm-hmm. and so forth, the close and the referrals and so forth. But as far as if it's a, you know, a one-off, or if it's just a not that type of business where that's the case, say, well, how long is it going to take? I don't know. But it's mm-hmm. going to have to be, it's going to have to be when that person needs it or wants it, right? And, you know, and all the things that come across on a sale. So, you know, it always comes down to that if we want that person to buy, we need to have a compelling reason why, you know, on their, right. from their perspective, why they should buy.
And you talked a ton about...
Yeah, but yeah.
So the thing, I think I find that when we chat about, like, even when you go to review calls, et cetera, like, we're always talking about the why, but to your point, the problem that they're seeking to solve, the why now. And especially when we're talking about introducing a new way of doing something, there's something that we need to achieve in terms of bumping them out of their current state and realizing there's a new way. And then again, because we do have an obligation to hit numbers in a certain time frame as sellers. So it's like, how do you take the framework of the go giver and then start building out that why now?
Okay, well, so let's say that, because he said two things. One, absolutely right on, and the other would be an I don't care from the viewpoint of the customer. The first mm-hmm. thing you said is we need to give them a compelling reason and help them see why it's in their best interest. Well, that's why yeah. it's called sales and not order taking. Now, and again, we're assuming as an underlying premise, it is in their best interest. Okay.
Sure.
It's the salesperson's sure. job to discover what they need, what they want, what they desire, and also to be able to know your product and service, how it helps them, because you know enough about their business to be able to help them identify weaknesses they may not even know they have that you can help mitigate through your product or service, or advantages and opportunities they have that they don't know about that you can help them leverage. Those are right. all the things that you can do as a salesperson. Now, when you say we have an obligation to hit our numbers, sure, as far as, you know, being able to keep your job, but they don't care.
Right.
We can't expect them to. There's no reason why they should care.
Yeah.
Right. And so it all comes back. So what I'm saying is it comes back to the first thing you said. Right.
Right.
The first thing you said, and that is we need to be able to give them a compelling reason to buy. There's nothing un-go-giverish or what have you about that.
No, right.
The go-giver
right.
is helping someone to own something that they should own and that they want to.
Yeah. And I guess it would come into like the, I think it's the law of influence, or if it, no, is it, this is where you suspend self-interest.
So that's the law of influence, where we say your influence is determined by how abundantly you place the other person's interest first. Now, again, not in such a way that you're a doormat or a martyr, or that you're self-sacrificial. Absolutely nothing like that at all. It's simply as Joe, the protege, learned in the story from several of the mentors, and that is the golden rule of sales, of business, and that is all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust. Well, here's the thing. There's no faster, there's no quicker, there's no more powerful way to elicit those feelings toward you in others than by genuinely moving from an I focus or me focus to an other focus.
Yeah.
Looking to, as Sam, one of the mentors, advised Joe, make your win all about the other person's win.
Yeah.
The degree you do that, that's the degree to which they're going to buy.
that's the part that I think is like, it's kind of nested. It's not obvious, right? In that,
right.
And going even further into the law of influence law of influence, the depth of how much you suspend your interest for the others is what creates that time urgency, because you understand, you need to understand what they're trying to achieve by when, or at least seek to understand what they're trying to achieve by when, because everybody's got a timeline. And then you can kind of seek to frame your response or your solution to their problem with what you're selling, but at least you're not pushing.
Well, that should be a part of any conversation, any sales conversation when you're first discovering. It's not that really should be. And, you know, and one of them is a time. I mean, if you don't know that, then there's nothing there as a guideline. You know, it's sort of like when you've done everything right, and then you found out the person you're talking to does not have the decision making power, or they're just one cog in it in about four others in a complex sale, four or five others that you also have to, you know, if you've got to know your business enough to know the right questions to ask.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we committed to keep this one short today, and I want to make sure we kind of close out with a place to start for everyone. So if they've gone, they read GoGiver or GoGiver Leader or your books, so they believe in what you're talking about, they're looking at starting a change within themselves. What's the first, you know, generally speaking, what's the first place to start? Because there's five rules. It's tough to start with all five. Where's the best place to start?
Well, you know, I mean, in the story, remember Pindar's one condition of mentorship was that Joe had to apply each law that very day.
Right.
He didn't have to do it perfectly. That wasn't the issue. But it was taking action. That's why we say, you know, we want you to be a go giver. We also want you to be a go getter, person of action, right? Because you get right. So we say be a go getter, person of action, and a go giver, someone who's absolutely, totally laser focused on providing immense value to others. Be a go getter and a go giver. Just don't be a go taker, right? Yeah. The go taker is that person who feels entitled to take without having added value to the person, to the process, to the situation. And they tend to be very frustrated because they're rarely as successful as they think they should be. But why would they be? The other person knows that they don't really have their best interest at heart, that they're, and even when they are, and sometimes there are plenty of go takers who, despite themselves, they do well. Okay.
Yeah.
Boy, is it tough. That's a tough way to make a living because you don't have a lot of raving fans. And you're having to repeat the same processes over and over and over again. So, so I would say I'd start by this. You start by saying, how can I focus on bringing value to another human being? Now, let me just share, if I may.
Yeah.
When I say talk about value, we need to define what that really is. Value, see, price is a dollar figure. It's a dollar amount. It's finite. It is what it is. Value is different. Value is the relative worth or desirability of a thing, of something, to the end user or beholder. It's always in the eyes of the beholder. It's not what we think is of value or what we think they should think is of value. It's what they feel is of value. Our job is to discover that, right? So value, what is it about this product, this service, this concept, this idea that brings so much worth or value to it that person will willingly exchange their money for this and be ecstatic that they did, while we also make a very healthy profit, because it's always got to be, both parties. And so the first thing I'd say is, ask yourself first, how can I add value to this person? But then also ask yourself, do I know what it is they value?
There you go. Okay, right. That's the close right there. Do I know what they think is value?
And how do you find out? Well, aside from first, in overall, if you're dealing with a certain niche market, you have a basic idea because you're studying the industry and you kind of have an idea, but it's also a matter of researching them personally to the degree that you can, that's appropriate. And then of course it's asking questions.
Yeah.
Right. And so we really need to do our intel, and we really need to get the idea, and we need to ask the right questions and listen, and to understand that as human beings, we all come at it from our own set of beliefs. And we think that what we find of value is what everybody else would find of value. And that is not necessarily true at all. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a lot that goes that goes into it. But yeah, you always start with, how can I add value to this person's life? And it, you know, and a lot of times that happens well before that sales conversation.
That's really interesting. You know, I'll kind of like just feedback on that quickly, and then we'll close up. You know, recently, and I tried to have this discipline for a very long time, but like a lot of things, like the intentionality of the discipline fails. But recently I started kicking off our calls with, in the next half an hour, we're going to meet, and how can I make this valuable for you? Right. And I find that then it gives me a close at the bottom of the hour. Right. And so I'm pretty, I'm overt about that question. So that opens up the conversation. It just takes a lot of the air out of the room. And I hope that's reflective of what you just shared. If it's not, well, I'll learn another day.
No. So it's a great place to start, because you're asking that person, you know, what is it that what is it that you would want to see accomplished? What would you like to see as the result of this? You know, you're basically saying, what would you find to be of value? Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, as you're having a sales conversation, as you're adding, you know, as you're adding value to this person, just through the information you're providing or what have you, there are also all sorts of very general qualifying questions that you can ask. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that you get to know, including that time question, you know, including the decision-making question and all those types of things that you can very gently, very easily have in a conversation, which is going to allow you to serve that person. But also when you ask about what they find to be of value or what they find valuable in this thing, you've also got to understand that as they answer the question, you still need to even go deeper. Because they may say, well, I would like to see blank. But now you've got to ask yourself a question. How do you define blank? Okay. Am I defining blank the way this person's defining blank?
Right.
Because it could be two very different definitions that you both have. And if you're putting your definition on him, so now you're answering his questions and sharing the value you can provide in a way that would be a value to you, but maybe not to him. Right. So again, we always have to check our premises and ask the question, you know, do I know exactly what this person, and we can never know exactly, but we can get close enough.
Yeah.
But am I defining this term as he is defining this term? So you might say, if I may ask, or, you know, just to clarify so that I have a true understanding of what you mean, when you say X, can you tell me what? Boom. And you're asking them that now, let them define it more. Let them just go deeper into it. So now, and again, keep asking the why questions, keep asking the clarification and all that until you know, because remember, it's only when we absolutely, to the degree we can absolutely know what this person needs, wants, and desires, are we then able to connect the benefits of our product or service with those needs, wants, and desires. Otherwise, we're playing a guessing game.
Yep. Yeah. No, it's so like well said and an intake, but in the heat of the moment, I find like, this is why I think call recording is so important, because if you don't record your calls, you don't realize what you are not doing, right? We get caught up in what because we love to choose what we choose to remember the parts that we did well.
Right.
And willfully ignore the things that could use improvement. But I found that even by recording the calls and reflecting on them with intentionality to get better and to seek to understand better, that I'm able to get to where we got to go faster.
Yeah. Again, it's living in reality. And that's what you brought
living
up.
Living in reality, which brings us back to the top of the question stack. Well, thank you so much, Bob. That was an outstanding little sprint for both of us. I just appreciate all your writing and everything you've done. And I got to admit, getting back, preparing for this call, I got a chance to review my notes from both Go Giver and the Go Leader. And it was a chance to reflect on the state that I was kind of going through at that time And I really appreciate you putting those words together and making it easy to read, easy to understand, and easy to execute for anybody, right? And so thank you for that. And thank you for all those that are out there and for all those that are out there today that are going through some sort of transition or change. I do highly recommend you go through the book. It is a, you know, a sit down read. You can go through it and it does help you think about, and then go for a walk and think about the book and what that means to your life. Because I do feel that the frameworks that you provide make it very easy to understand how we can achieve the goal of commercializing what we're good at, but thinking about it in a way, like it's just no nonsense, right? Because it you do allow permission to think about this from a commercialization perspective instead of just like a do-good perspective.
Oh, sure. Because there's no dichotomy in that, yeah. You know, and you know, John coined a great saying that we used in the second book, Go Givers Sell More. He's such a great wordsmith. And that is that money is simply an echo of value. Money is an echo of value. It's the thunder to value's lightning, right? So you focus on the value you're providing. The money is simply a result of the value you've provided. But there's no, you know, treacherous dichotomy or false dilemma, the unnecessary use of the word or, right? Between, you know, it's not giving and it's not giving or receiving. It's giving and receiving, any more than you'd say breathe out or breathe in. No, you breathe out and you breathe in. But your focus is on the giving of value to others. When you do that, now you're creating that context for yourself.
Wonderful. Let's leave it at that. That was an outstanding close, particularly on the money is the echo of value. I think that that's something that, and then value is created by following the five laws and by thinking of other people. So thank you so much. What a wonderful share today. I appreciate it. If anyone wants to reach out to you, what's the best way to connect with you?
Best way is just go to burg.com and everything's there.
All right. Wonderful. And everyone listening on a podcast, we're on Apple and Spotify, please subscribe, hit that like and subscribe button. This is always good for everybody in ranking. And Bob, once again, thank you very much for your time. Outstanding. Appreciate it.
Thank
you. All right. Take care, everyone. All right. Thank you, sir.